This is Monday, February 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, we take a closer look at the continuing advance against IS in the Iraqi city of Mosul. Also ahead, did you hear what happened at the Academy Award ceremony last night?
There's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
We will take you to Hollywood for that story, and the U.S. president proposes a major increase in defense spending. That's all on today's International Edition. Iraqi forces Monday seized control of a key bridge in the city of Mosul as they push forward with their week-old offensive to clear Islamic State militants from the western side of that city. Officials say pro-government forces were in control of what is known as the Fourth Bridge, or the southernmost bridge across the Tigris River. Fighting in Mosul has badly damaged or destroyed all of the bridges, and restoring access across the river will allow the army to move troops and supplies. As the fighting in western Mosul intensifies, there's concern about civilians living there. The UN is describing a humanitarian crisis in that area, with people facing severe shortages of food, fuel, and medical supplies. Many of those civilians fled to western Mosul after being forced from the eastern part of the city, which Iraqi forces took back after a three-month fight that began last November. Ambassador James Jeffrey, a distinguished fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, told VOA's Victor Beatty the IS defenders have been under constant pressure from U.S.-led airstrikes and may be cracking and looking for ways to escape and fight another day.
The other thing is, since the Trump administration came in, it's clear that the rules of engagement, the nature of the firepower that has been committed and all of that by the United States, the more forward deployment of advisory and air control teams, this is all having a real effect. But ultimately, the credit goes to the Iraqi elite forces and all of the elite forces in the Iraqi army.
Well, there was some concern about their ability to conduct such operations. Has your opinion improved in the estimation of their capability?
Sure. When they went into Mosul, they had a lot of problems, even the counterterrorism service. But what's improved is they're much more careful in clearing areas. They've learned how to deploy tanks in the direct fire and support role right up with the infantry, and that's where the tanks protect the infantry protects the tanks. That takes some coordination and training, and it's pretty complex. And they're clearly a much, much better force now. Their morale is very high. They've replaced some of the casualties they took initially, and I think that this is ahead of schedule, frankly.
There was always some concern that the civilians and the tight construction of the streets, alleyways, and so forth of western Mosul, the concentration of civilians would make this a very slow process. Are you concerned about civilian casualties?
You're always concerned about civilian casualties, but it comes at two levels. One is civilian casualties that are either deliberate or non-deliberate, but are so massive that they have an impact on the morale and the attitude of a whole civilian population. That's Aleppo. I don't see that happening here. They've been very careful in East Mosul. And as you know, most of the civilians stayed in place, some tens of thousands, maybe a bit more, went into refugee camps, but they've been able to basically deal with this. And this, again, is something that you've got a tremendous international effort backing a huge Iraqi and Kurdish effort. And everybody knows you don't want to go back and fight it again, so be nice to the population. There'll be some individual cases, as we've seen in other battles, but the Iraqis have done this in Ramadi and Fallujah and Tikrit and East Mosul, and I think they'll be successful in West Mosul as well.
Well, with President Trump expected to receive a defense strategy this week on defeating Islamic State, James Jeffrey said the three elements will likely include dismantling its caliphate by completing the takeover of Mosul and retaking Raqqa in Syria, defeating the Sunni insurgency in the region, and making sure it doesn't come back. At the Oscars in Hollywood, the coming-of-age film Moonlight was named Best Picture after the musical La La Land was announced as the winner by mistake. Michael Sullivan reports that at the end of the evening, the Hollywood musical still had earned six awards while losing the key honor of Best Picture.
A romantic musical, La La Land, earned awards for production design, original score, and original song. Its star Emma Stone earned the Oscar for Best Actress, and director Damien Chazelle was named Best Director. At 32, he is the youngest winner ever in that category. And the highlight of the evening, presenter Faye Dunaway named the winner of Best Picture, the final award of the evening.
La La Land.
That was wrong, and the error was quickly corrected.
There's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
Moonlight, a coming-of-age tale of a gay black man, had really earned Best Picture, to the surprise of producers for both films. Moonlight co-star Mahershala Ali was named Best Supporting Actor, and the film earned an Oscar for its adapted screenplay. Viola Davis was named Best Supporting Actress for the drama Fences, a story centered on an African-American family and based on a Pulitzer Prize-winning play. Just 1 year after the Oscars were criticized for lacking diversity, African Americans were prominent among the nominees, and with Davis and Ali among the winners. Ali is also the first Muslim actor ever to win an Oscar. Accepting the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress, Davis said that stories like the one told in the film Fences explore the potential of ordinary people.
I became an artist, and thank God I did. Because we are the only profession that celebrates what it means to live a life.
The wrenching family drama Manchester by the Sea earned an Oscar for Casey Affleck, honored as Best Actor and for Original Screenplay. Throughout the award show, President Donald Trump was a target of criticism as host Jimmy Kimmel and some presenters and winners took aim at his policy, barring entry of people from 7 mostly Muslim nations, a ban now put on hold by the courts. Iranian director Asghar Farhadi, who won the Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film for The Salesman, did not attend the ceremony in protest. An Iranian-American scientist read his acceptance speech, saying the immigration ban breeds fear, while filmmakers create empathy with others. First-time winner Emma Stone was grateful as she held her Oscar statuette that her work is now being recognized.
I still have a lot of growing and learning and work to do. And this guy is a really beautiful symbol to continue on that journey, and I am so grateful for that. So thank you so much.
The Oscars are presented by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences and are the highlight of the year in Hollywood. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
We should tell you that Michael mentioned Viola Davis, and we will have a feature on her and some of the other winners from the Oscars later on in this program. But now let's turn our attention to our social media guru, Andrew Palcheski, and I guess what happened last night. I guess I'm hearing stories that it's unprecedented, other stories that it's not unprecedented, but it's got to be big on social media.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was watching the ceremony last night thinking about maybe some of the things we would talk about, some of the things that I was seeing that were trending, and we'll get to those in a little bit. But sure enough, the end of the show comes and this hashtag envelope gate, hashtag Oscar fail.
Envelope gate.
Yeah, there's one thing that's for certain. This has never happened before in the 89 years of the Academy Awards. So whether it's, whatever people make of it, it has never happened before. And as we watched the social media as this happened, it kind of went in these phases from shock, a lot of people asking, what happened? What's going on? Quite a few people, by the way, turned off the TV when they heard La La Land won and went to bed. And there were people that were checking their phone saying, wait, what happened? What's going on? Even people this morning waking up not realizing what had happened until they went and checked social media. But a lot of confusion still, a lot of people trying to wonder who's to blame, whether it's PricewaterhouseCoopers, the accounting firm who is in charge of tabulating the votes and responsible for those envelopes, and some kind of mix of confusion and sympathy even for Warren Beatty, who got caught in the middle of all this, and Faye Dunaway as well.
You know who handled it beautifully? The producer of Moonlight. Obviously, he knows the people of La La Land.
Of La La Land, right. Yeah. I mean, Jordan Horowitz is his name, and he's getting a lot of praise on social media.
An amazing job.
Absolutely. Yeah. Total class act. Quickly tried to, rectify the situation, get the Moonlight people up there, and he said it's such an honor for him to give that award to his friends from Moonlight. And Barry Jenkins, the director of Moonlight, in a quote that was shared around social media, in the press room afterwards, he said that these two movies have been kind of following each other throughout the entire award season, and they've become such good friends, the people who created these two movies. And he said that he wasn't surprised when he heard La La Land initially, because both of these films were so good that he thought either one could win. So as much as there's confusion on social media and a lot of jokes at the expense of the Academy, there is this sense that, you know, it was a really nice moment that could have gone even more awry.
Oh, yeah.
That they tried to salvage.
Well, it was fascinating. I went to bed early because I get up early, but you stayed up for some strange reason because you're far younger than I am. But nevertheless, I mean, when I saw it this morning, I just went, whoa. I know what Andrew and I are going to talk about today.
Absolutely.
We'll pick up something else tomorrow, okay?
Sounds good.
Andrew Palczewski here on International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, Iraqi forces seized control of a key bridge in the city of Mosul. U.S. President Trump calls for a massive increase in defense spending. The White House seeks to fend off the latest calls for an independent probe of Russian efforts to impact last year's U.S. election, as well as any ties between Moscow and the president's inner circle. A German hostage is executed in the Philippines by an Islamic militant group after a ransom deadline lapses. The UN human rights chief warns world peace and stability based on fundamental human rights are under threat by so-called reckless political profiteers. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The European Space Agency says an international group of astronomers has discovered a record-setting pulsar some 50 million light-years from Earth. Using data gathered by the space agency's XMM Newton X-ray Space Observatory and archival data from NASA's New Star X-ray Space Telescope, the scientists say the pulsar is the most distant and the brightest of its kind that has been detected so far. ESA says that every second the pulsar emits the same amount of energy released by our sun over 3.5 years. A pulsar is a type of neutron star, which is the collapsed core of a star that exploded in a massive supernova. What makes it a pulsar is that this particular type of neutron star also pumps out two rotating and pulsing symmetrical beams of electromagnetic radiation that shines so brightly, scientists call them cosmic lighthouses. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
I'm VOA's Ira Melman, and this is International Edition. I'm in Washington, D.C. We continue now. The White House says President Donald Trump's upcoming budget will propose a whopping $54 billion increase, that's with a B, in defense spending, and impose corresponding cuts to domestic programs and foreign aid. Trump's defense budget and spending levels for domestic agency operating budgets will be revealed in a partial submission to Congress next month, with the proposals on taxes and other programs coming later. Meanwhile, bipartisan calls are growing here in Washington for an independent probe of Russian efforts to impact last year's U.S. election and any ties that may exist between Moscow and President Trump's inner circle. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman tells VOA's Jim Stevenson about a high-profile Republican joining the chorus for a probe and how the White House is trying to fend off this escalating controversy.
Jim, Congressman Daryl Issa is the latest lawmaker to say that what we need is something beyond what individual congressional committees are already doing. In this case, what he's calling for is a special prosecutor, someone who would be independent of the pressures that could exist within the Justice Department, and saying that Attorney General Jeff Sessions needs to recuse himself. What's startling about this is that Daryl Issa is a very conservative Republican, and this adds to sort of what is now a bipartisan chorus saying that the congressional committees that have been probing Russian activities up until this point, all of which are controlled by Republicans, may not be sufficient. I don't want to say it's a significant domino, but this is certainly a significant development when you have a Republican of ISIS stature joining the chorus right along with Democrats saying that more needs to be done.
And we also have the latest tweet from Donald Trump talking about fake news and Russia. He has blamed a lot of this on what so-called fake news.
Yes, Donald Trump took to Twitter on both his personal account, the real Donald Trump, as well as his presidential POTUS Twitter handle, to say that, quote, Russia talk is fake news, all caps, put out by the Dems, the Democrats, and played up by the media in order to mask the big election defeat and the illegal leaks, exclamation point. Jim, I don't know if you and I really need it anymore if all the news comes through Twitter. But this is not the first time that President Trump has tweeted something to this effect, and I suspect it will not be the last.
Interesting, too, this week we had what is known as a gaggle in the White House, not an official briefing by the press office, but it's an informal gathering of journalists with White House folks, presumably the press secretary, in a background setting where the comments made on news issues of the week are taken on background for reporters. This week, Sean Spicer selectively let in a few news organizations and shut out others amid all this chorus of Russia.
And Jim, the news organizations that were shut out are some of America's best known. I mean, you talk about the Washington Post, you talk about the New York Times, you talk about CNN, the cable news network, you talk about Politico, which has a huge internet presence among Washington insiders and anyone who has any sort of curiosity about American politics. These are big name news organizations. It's not like they're shutting out some minor newspaper from the heartland of the country. These are news organizations that are accustomed to having special access, if anything, to the newsmakers in Washington. And to have the door slammed in their faces by the White House was a shock to them. But I think it was also something of a shock to anyone who just knows about the history of and the role played by the news media in this country and the often contentious relations that have existed historically between newsmakers and news outlets, but a general understanding that there is a role for journalism and that it's an important role. This is something that really raised a lot of eyebrows.
Michael Bowman with us. Great perspectives of what is going on each and every week in Washington. Thank you so much, Michael.
It's a pleasure, Jim.
VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman speaking with my colleague Jim Stevenson here on VOA's International Edition. Well, we told you that we'll head back to that Oscar story, not the weird part of it where the film that didn't win was announced as the winner before a mistake was admitted. It was a big night for actress Viola Davis, who won an Oscar in the category for Best Supporting Actress. Her crowning achievement comes after a long and illustrious career of numerous awards and 3 Oscar nominations. Her win also highlights Hollywood's growing interest in complex minority characters. VOA's Penelope Pulu has the story.
It's not easy for me to admit that I've been standing in the same place for 18 years.
Well, I've been standing with you. I got a life, too. Don't you think I had dreams and hopes?
In Fences, Viola Davis plays Rose, the introspective wife who stands by her man, aware of his imperfections. She perseveres next to him, not with deference, but with dignity.
I told him if he wasn't a mankind, then move out the way so the mankind could find me.
She's the balancing act between her explosive husband and her brooding son, and when her philandering husband, played by Denzel Washington, brings home a baby, she accepts it not because she has to, but because she chooses to. This is not the first time Davis fleshes out complex roles, but her Oscar win underscores the movie industry's new trend to create 3-dimensional African-American characters. Another example is Mahershala Ali's awarded performance as Juan, a drug dealer in a poor Miami neighborhood, in the indie drama Moonlight. Juan finds himself taking care of a boy abandoned by his own mother, a drug addict. In this role, Mahershala Ali is both criminal and nurturer.
You're in the middle of the world.
I don't think it's an issue of there's more films representing black experience in America. I think it's great films that represent a black experience that are being pushed to the fore finally and being recognized.
Giovanna Chesler is director of the film school at George Mason University. She says this recognition was years in the making.
Audiences were starving for stories like that, but David Oyelowo and Ava DuVernay laid the groundwork for this moment.
Filmmaker Ava DuVernay, who made the film drama Selma 3 years ago, and David Oyelowo, who starred as Martin Luther King Jr., did not win accolades then, but their work has passed into the annals of great acting and movie making.
We're not asking, we're demanding. Give us the vote!
And action!
Now, DuVernay, who also directed the acclaimed documentary 13th about incarceration in America, has been tapped by Disney Studios to direct a big-budget fantasy drama.
I go out of here every morning, I bust my butt because I like you.
And then there is Oscar winner Denzel Washington. A class of his own, he has for years been part of Hollywood's mainstream, but still tries to push the envelope with contentious characters and projects. He directed and adapted August Wilson's theater play Fences for the big screen and portrays Rose's conflicted husband, Troy.
Who is Troy?
I don't know.
He doesn't know. You know, he's working it out. I mean, that's why it's a great drama, because there's drama. Because all the questions aren't answered when the curtain goes up.
And who hasn't loved the film hit Hidden Figures, the heartwarming drama about three African-American women who helped NASA in the 60s send the first American into space and then on the moon?
Just on our way to work at NASA, sir.
I had no idea they hired.
There are quite a few women working in the space program.
The movie has won the hearts and minds of fans, a reminder that audiences crave stories with non-formulae characters in unconventional situations. When these characters and stories win, we all do, because such narratives become the catalyst of equality in popular culture. Penelope Hulu, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks for joining us on International Edition. That'll wrap up our program for today. Find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our thanks to director Patrice Martin, our engineer Thomas Blondet. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States strongly supports NATO and will be unwavering in its commitment to the transatlantic alliance, said Vice President Mike Pence in a speech at the Munich Security Conference. But Europe's defense, he said, requires your commitment as much as ours. Our transatlantic alliance has at its core two principles that are central to this mission. In Article 5, alliance members pledge to come to each other's aid in the event of an attack. In Article 3, members vow to contribute, maintain, and develop their individual and collective capacity to resist attack. The promise to share the burden of our defense has gone unfulfilled for too many, for too long, said Vice President Pence, and it erodes the very foundation of our alliance. In 2014, each member state committed to work toward spending 2% of their gross domestic product on defense within a decade. But only the United States and four other members are meeting the standard, Mr. Pence said. Let me be clear on this point. The President of the United States expects our allies to keep their word, to fulfill this commitment, and for most, that means the time has come to do more, said Mr. Pence. The rise of adversaries, new and old, demands a strong response from NATO, said the Vice President. In the East, NATO has embarked on improvement in its deterrent posture by stationing four combat-ready multinational battalions in Poland and the Baltic states. The United States will continue its leadership role in this enhanced forward presence initiative and other critical joint actions. With regard to Ukraine, said Vice President Pence, our alliance will continue to hold Russia accountable and demand that they honor the Minsk agreements, beginning with de-escalating violence in eastern Ukraine. At the same time, Vice President Pence urged NATO to adapt to new challenges. In particular, he noted the need for the alliance to intensify efforts to cut off terrorist funding and increase cyber capabilities. A stronger NATO means a safer world, and the United States of America looks forward to continuing to work with its partners in NATO to achieve just that.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.